So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
And joining us today, all the way from North Carolina, is Engadget's Master BBQ Chef, Billy Steele. Hey.
Hello, hello.
Billy's not only our master barbecuer, he's also Engadget's resident audio expert, guru, whatever the word you want to use is, and he just reviewed the new Pixel Buds. So we're going to talk all about that this episode.
And we're also going to chat a bit about Upload, the new Amazon Prime series from Greg Daniels, the creator of The Office and King of the Hill and so many great shows. We have a bit of an interview with him too, so stay tuned for that.
Before we get to all of that, please make sure you subscribe to us on your podcatcher of choice. Leave us an iTunes rating, because how else will we know how we're doing? Or if you have much longer thoughts, send us an email to podcast@engadget.com. All right, so Billy, so you review the Pixel Buds. Did you like them?
Yeah, I actually did really like them. And I think that the key thing to remember here is that up until now, Google did not have a direct answer to AirPods. They had the previous Pixel Buds, which were much different and, to be honest, didn't really work well at all.
Yeah, they seem very bad by all accounts. Right.
Yeah, I did not review them. I have interacted with them a couple times, but V wrote our review of that product, and basically his conclusion was, this is really incomplete, half the features don't work. Google Assistant, which is the most important thing, was very hit or miss. And so
V, by the way, is Chris Velasco, our mobile guru guy. He's been on the show quite a bit.
But yeah, the original Pixel Buds were kind of the punchline to a joke, basically.
Yeah, it was sort of like we need to get in on this, and it really feels like they sort of rushed it out the door and didn't refine the core features that needed to be there. And I should say, this isn't necessarily a Google problem. The touch controls are always an issue, so they can be super hit or miss. Sometimes they'll work, sometimes they won't, especially when you're dealing with things like a double tap and a triple tap to skip songs ahead or backwards, things like that. And so one of the key issues with the first Pixel Buds was the fact that when you hung them around your neck, because they were connected with a cable, the touch controls would sort of like bang into each other or up against your body. And so I think Chris noted in his review a couple times that he would pause them, hang them around his neck, and he would go back and they would be dead because at some point they unpaused, like colliding with his body or colliding with each other or something like that. So,
you know, I make fun of Google quite a bit for hardware and products, but it's because of stuff like that where it's like they build these things in a vacuum. I don't know if normal humans ever actually get to use them. And then a simple issue like that can kill a product for reviewers and for a lot of people.
Well, so, there's an issue with these that I think we'll get to in a minute.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, my little Google loving heart is crying right now. But yeah. So the new Buds, better?
Yeah, the smart features, which were for the most part carried over from the first Pixel Buds. So you have direct access to Google Assistant without pressing any buttons. I think the term is sort of hands-free access to your voice commands and stuff like that. So you just say, hey, Google, or okay, Google. And one of my speakers is probably going to wake up here in a second. So no pressing any buttons or anything like that to activate that feature. And also the Google Translate stuff is back again. So basically, you can have the Buds on, you can open up Google Translate, you speak, the Buds send everything to your phone. And then when the person on the other end that you're speaking to pushes a button inside the app, you sort of can have a real-time translated conversation.
Nice.
And real-time is sort of in quotes because there is a little bit of a delay. It's not to the point that it makes it super awkward, but like me speaking English is translated much faster than the other language coming back.
Mm-hmm. What languages are supported, Billy? And yeah, did you use this with, you
know, was it good?
People who actually spoke other languages?
Yeah. Well, I'm stuck at home, so I had to like simulate these things as best I could. But I
could have just talked to me.
I know French. So I did some French with nice. Google Translate, but so it supports over 40 languages. So Spanish, German, like Korean, Japanese, Chinese are all on the list. Pretty much, if you would think about a list of 40 quote unquote major languages around the world, they're probably on the list. So I still think it would be awkward if you were, say, traveling somewhere in Europe and you were talking to someone in a shop or on the street and you have earbuds in. So it's like automatically a little bit of a wall. And then you are also asking them to speak into your phone. It's sort of, it's a thing that works and it's a thing that'll get you the results that you want, but it's also going to be a very awkward social interaction.
Yeah. I can imagine also, like, if you go to France, I think the story, I have never been to France, but the story I've heard from a lot of my friends and family who go there is like, if people are appreciate it when you try to speak French, but if you're being, you know, if you're forcing them into English or trying to like change the way they normally speak, things get very awkward and they may just end up being rude to you. That won't work. That interaction with Google Buds just won't work, it seems.
Well, is it, Billy, do you think it would be better than using Google Translate on your phone to do this?
I think it's about the same. I think it's just the perception of you having something in your ears while you're trying to talk to someone is a little weird, but I think they also intend for this to be used for things like video calls somehow. There was mention of that, but the real world interaction is obviously like the first scenario, primary scenario that they're trying to get at, I think.
I think the thing about like just doing it all on your phone is like the user interaction is very clear in terms of what you're doing and what you're asking the other person to do. Doing it with the Buds is kind of annoying, but
And so, one of the other issues is it has nothing to do with the Buds. It's mostly just Google Translate. Is it doesn't take into account sort of like casual phrasing. So it's like straightforward literal translation. And if you've ever taken a foreign language class, you know that the teacher's always like, well, yes, that's technically correct, but nobody would ever say that.
Gotta love it. Do you actually find the Google Assistant stuff useful, Billy? Because I've used a whole bunch of headphones, you know, with Google Assistant, with Alexa, with even like Siri, with like the AirPods Pro. I've never found that useful. And I still occasionally use those things on my phones, but with, you know, on a headphone, it has never been that great for me.
Yeah, I don't use it when I'm out and about so much as when I'm at home. I have a Google Home Mini, and then I have another Google Assistant speaker in the kitchen. And so the fact that those have Chromecast built in is nice. And the fact that I can use one of them to control Sonos is also nice. And so, I use it at home for the most part. On headphones, not so much. I would say hardly ever.
I'm the same way. So did you find it actually being integrated on the Buds to be useful, even when you were at home?
Not really. But again, I would say if I was out and about, especially if I was, say, at a show, which who knows when we're going to be able to go to trade shows.
You mean out in public with other people? Yeah.
But like, if I needed to know where my next meeting was or something like that, wanted to get a weather update or something, I could see them being used for that, like during a commute or, you know, something like that where you have your hands tied up and, or you're just walking along and you don't really want to pull out your phone and try to flip through some screens and do that sort of thing. But to your point, I agree. Google Assistant, Siri, Alexa are, for me, primarily better used inside the home and less so in a mobile or headphone setting.
Let's kind of explain what's going on here, because for me, the experience was a lot different than on like at home, because I also got a set of the Pixel Buds to play with. And I don't know the main interaction you did, Billy, with the assistant on the Buds, but for me, I just found it so annoying. One of the ways it will happen is that while you're listening to music or whatever, the assistant, when you get a notification, the assistant would just like pop up and be like, oh, you got a message. Would you like me, if you would like me to read it, just press and hold, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if that's the only means of interacting with the assistant, because that's just been the only means for me.
No,
but so it's annoying as all.
Interrupting your workflow? That sounds great.
Yeah. So that actually brings me to one point that is kind of a pain point, in that the Pixel Buds app, which is built in on a Pixel phone. So I had a Pixel 4, so I didn't have to download anything else. It's just sort of, there was an update. It's now a system level app that's sort of just baked into Android on a Pixel phone. On other Android phones, you have to download a standalone Pixel Buds app, but they it looks the same no matter how you access it. It's just a matter of if it's built in or if it's a piece of software that you have to download. But once you get that, it's basically just a bunch of on and off switches. So it's like you can turn on the adaptive sound or turn off the adaptive sound. And it's like that for, I think it's like five or six things. And it gives you battery level updates and stuff like that. But there's no, and it's like this way for AirPods too. There's no EQ or sound profile settings or anything like that to help you improve or customize things. It's just a matter of, it's just a matter of turning things off and on for the most part. Which I mean, I kind of get to an extent, but to Sherlyn's point, and that's one of the things that you can turn off is Google Assistant reading every notification as it comes in.
Good Lord.
You can, it's really annoying.
It's so annoying. I will say, like, I was so annoyed. I was on a call with a friend with these buds and it just kept coming. I was like getting pings from people and I couldn't hear my friend telling me about a very important detail in her life this week, because Google Assistant was like, you have one email from a PR person that won't stop pitching you over the weekend.
That sounds like a bad Black Mirror thing of just like, oh, you have a new email. You have a new email. You always have email. Turn off your email notifications, people.
It's one of those things that like sounds good, and then you like actually try to use it, and you're like, dear God, this is driving me insane. So, yeah, I mean, you can turn it off, but it will definitely cause you problems if you're, like Sherlyn said, on a call. They don't stop. Like it keeps
Don't stop. I would like them to stop it on a call. I definitely like, I don't see the use case where you would need your notifications to be read to you during a call. So definitely they should have muted it during a call. I will say though, I can see the scenario where I'm commuting to work ever again in the future. And, you know, I'm listening to music and then a notification comes in. I wouldn't mind in that situation to have my notification just read out to me. So maybe it needs to be a bit more context aware or give me more options as to like when to turn it on.
So how do these things actually sound, by the way? Like for music, for, you know, podcasts?
So whatever. I went in, like sound quality wise, I went in with some pretty low expectations just because that so often when you have these companies that aren't necessarily audio companies, but they're trying their hand at making headphones, you really just never know what to expect.
Yeah.
And so I was actually pretty pleasantly surprised. They sound pretty good. The main criticism, not just from me, but from other reviewers as well, is that the bass is a little lacking, which isn't entirely surprising. A lot of true wireless earbuds suffer with low end tone, and it's just the fact that you have such a small housing projecting like a small beam of sound into a confined space. There's only like so much you can do, and you have to really, really be on it to nail it. And some companies do it. I mean, the Sennheiser Momentum True Wireless Buds have good bass. The Sonys that we'll talk about in a minute have good bass. So it's there. It's achievable. It's just really hard.
And those buds are a little bigger usually too, right?
Yes, like exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And these are tiny.
It's also priorities. I think it sounded like Google was, you know, didn't make a bigger housing for it because they were prioritizing fit, maybe, because the fit is nice for me. I like that they were kind of small.
I think Google's priorities were we have to revise the smart features that we didn't get right the last time. And yeah, they wanted to make this something that they felt like people could wear for up to 5 hours at a time, which is what the battery life is. So I would say they're probably around the same size. If you don't count the sort of like fit wing that they have on the back, they're about the same size as the Jabra Elite 75T. Or maybe somewhere around the Galaxy Buds Plus. And those are some of the smaller ones that I've reviewed in the last few months.
Would you wear this running or for some kind of vigorous activity?
Yeah, so a few months ago, right before Christmas, we actually installed some gym equipment in our garage. Ooh. So I guess we were sort of...
preparing for this.
Yeah, unknowingly preparing for it. But yeah, I mean, I wore them doing some cardio stuff, some weightlifting stuff, and yeah, no problems with them staying in place. I've heard several people say that they didn't think that these were very comfortable, and I always caveat that with sticking something in your ear holes is only ever going to be so comfortable. Like, there's only so much you can do about that. Like, the most comfortable headphones are going to be super soft, cushiony over-ear headphones. Yeah. And when you're actually sticking something in your ears, like, there's only so much you can do. And, you know, the cheapest way to go about it is these sort of silicone or rubber tips. And they are not padded at all. There are padded earbud tips, but they cost more. So a lot of companies don't include them. If one of your primary criticisms of a pair of true wireless earbuds is that they're not comfortable, and they're not comfortable because you just have to wear them, then I don't really see how you can mark that as a criticism. So
that's such a personal thing too, like aside, unless you have like perfectly conformed earbuds to your ears. Like I have strange ears, and I actually really like earbuds because my ear holes are like great for buds. Like they just fit well with buds. Over the ear headphones are a little tougher with me, but yeah, to each their own. It sounds like these can stay in place, which I think is like the big thing. I'm really interested though, Billy. I know you really like the Jabra 75Ts. I really like Jabra's headphones too, like in terms of value and sound quality. How would you compare these to those?
Well, it really comes down to what your priorities are. So if you are way more embedded with Google Assistant than I am, the Pixel Buds are probably going to be your choice just because of that super deep integration with Google's Assistant. But if you're looking for something more general, and I would say also, especially if you don't have a Pixel phone or an Android device, if you have an iPhone, the Jabras would be the choice just because they're sort of system agnostic. Jabra does have a companion app that allows you to tweak EQ and sort of like set up some personalized audio settings. There's a ambient sound mode that you can turn off and on. That's really nice. Yeah.
When you said the battery life was 5 hours, how does that compare to like most other pairs of earbuds you've tested?
In the review, I did a lot of comparisons to the AirPods. And just because I feel like these are Google's AirPods, basically.
Yeah.
And so when you consider what Apple offers... it's the same. It's 5 hours. These are way more comfortable than the regular AirPods. Not talking about the AirPods Pro. That's a completely different
beast
thing. Right.
Right.
So just the regular AirPods, these Pixel Buds are way more comfortable than those. Battery life is on par, and I would say the sound is better than the AirPods just because these have that tip that we mentioned. So it seals, you get some passive noise cancellation or noise isolation, I guess is the technical term, that you don't get with AirPods.
What about versus AirPods Pro? Because those have ANC, but even without the ANC, I feel like you get some benefit from those rubber tips.
Yeah, exactly. The AirPods Pro is definitely a step up, just because you do have that tip and it offers that seal, and not only the seal for audio, but just some sort of increase in comfort than just having a piece of hard plastic stuck in your ear. So, at 5 hours, the Pixel Buds are on the low end these days. 5 hours a year ago or 2 years ago would have been great, because when we started, everything was at two or three, and we were like, how are these ever going to be a thing if we can only wear them for a couple hours at a time? So now we are seeing 9, 10, even up to 15 hours is becoming the standard. The Jabra Elite 75T is 7.5 hours on a charge, and the price is almost exactly the same as the Pixel Buds, 180. The Galaxy Buds Plus are 150, and they have 11 hours of battery life.
They last a lot longer.
Yeah, they last a long time. And unlike the first set of Galaxy Buds, the Galaxy Buds Plus, when they came out, Samsung also introduced an iOS app. So you get a lot of the customization that you could only get on Android before, now with iOS with those as well. So it's a much better product. And 150 is a great price for a set of true wireless earbuds.
For me, the mark of a pair of any device, whether it's good, it's how likely am I to continue using it. And because I'm a Pixel user, the setup for these buds was so seamless. It was so good. All I did was open the case and they paired. Like, after I took them out of the box, I opened the case and they paired to my Pixel 3.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
You know, we talk about how sort of like Google and Apple and Samsung sort of all piggyback off of each other. And that's definitely a feature that Google saw Apple with the AirPods. Well. And I would say I like Google's implementation of it a little better. It's a small notification at the top of your phone, not a huge window that takes up most of your display when you just flip open the case. Like you mentioned, you flip it open and they're connected, and you get you get a notification that tells you how much battery you have left in the buds and in the case. And Google went a step further than Apple does. Apple just tells you sort of the two buds together. Google will let you know what the battery percentage is for each bud individually, which is kind of nice.
One more question for you, Billy. Like, how easy is it to, like, hop between different devices with these earbuds? Because that's, as you know, I the AirPods Pro, I feel like that is my favorite feature, is that I could quickly go to my Apple TV, I could quickly switch it to my MacBook, I could quickly switch it to my iPhone, and most Bluetooth headphones, it's a process, you know?
And the reason why you can do that is because Apple is storing all of that information in iCloud. So, you know, even if you haven't used, let's say, a pair of AirPods Pro with your MacBook yet, it's still in your list of Bluetooth devices automatically because it's carried over with iCloud. So that part is better, I would say, on the Apple devices. I also should caveat it a little bit. I'm not going from a Pixel 4 to a Google Chromebook or a Google tablet. Right. I'm going from a Pixel 4 to a MacBook. So,
anything else, Shirley? I think there was a hiss problem you wanted to talk about, right?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I mean, there's plenty. We could talk forever on this. I mean, quick shout out. I just want to squeeze that, like, the touch controls on the Pixel Buds Surface, I love them. For me, it's so rare to be able to control volume from true wireless earbuds, and these worked well. I could skip tracks by double tapping or go back by triple tapping and then slide forward or backwards to control volume. And I haven't been able to do that on any, like, true wireless earbuds yet. I might be wrong. I haven't tested as many as Billy. But yeah, no, I started to hear, first of all, and it's sort of static sound when the earbuds weren't playing anything. And Billy worked on the review, but kind of like we were just sort of talking about them in tandem and, I asked him, and he hadn't heard it on his unit. And then I started asking around. We had other, like, I have friends. And,
Whoa.
Hold on. Let's back up for a second.
I asked some of my other reviewer friends, and some of them also heard the static. And this was right as the review embargo was lifting. So then everyone went live with their reviews, and we started seeing it reported as a larger, well, a more common issue than I had initially thought. So then Billy and I talked about it, and Billy, do you want to explain, like, what do you think is happening here?
Yeah, so I don't know for sure, because I'm not a product engineer, but there was a similar problem with the first Pixel Buds in that, and I forget the wording that Google used, but it's something like a small set of our users encountered
interference,
a normal amount of interference, and not everybody can hear it. And we determined during our testing that so few people could hear it that we could just proceed. Basically, now this is not a direct quote. This is Billy paraphrasing what they told us. But basically, their answer was, you know, yeah, it's there, but not everybody's going to hear it, and so few people are going to hear it that we just don't. We didn't care to fix it before we shipped the product. So
that sounds like Google hardware, baby.
Yeah.
So, Charlene, I am so sorry that you're such a Google fangirl because they keep doing this. I feel like their excuse is, this is white noise. This is our alternative to ANC.
There's some kind of like Bluetooth interference going on. And I don't know if it's something to do with the initial pairing, like the Bluetooth low energy kind of thing that goes into pairing with your device or whatnot. But it's definitely a Bluetooth issue. And I guess the good news is they did issue an update for the first Pixel Buds that sort of remedied the issue. So this is, I mean, they're enough people are talking about it. They're going to fix it.
Not to pick on Google too much, though. Like all these wireless earbuds, they're all going to die. Like these things are built for you to lose them. These things are built for like something bad that you're going to forget them in your jeans pockets and throw them in the washer. So, you know, this happens. I have my right AirPods Pro bud has just died. It started crackling and then it just like stopped working all of a sudden.
Take that, Apple hardware.
They all, you know, this will all happen. They're all bad. Keep that in mind as you buy these things. That's why I don't think it's worth investing too much. If you get a good deal, then hop on them.
Under $200, probably fine, but anything more than that. Just to go back to one thing you just mentioned, Devendra, ANC is something that's not on these Pixel Buds. And so Google has a feature called Adaptive Sound that they say they sort of pitched it as an alternative to ANC, but it's really not at all. And it doesn't work very well.
Hey.
Now, Sherlyn, you'll even admit that it was subtle when it did work.
It was subtle.
Yeah. So basically what happens is when you say, nobody's doing this right now, obviously, but if you were to walk into a loud, busy coffee shop, it would temporarily increase the volume from where you were so that you could still hear things. And then when you left the coffee shop, it returns to where you were. So
they basically stole a feature that cars have because cars do that for when you hit on the highway versus city driving.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, it's basically
amazing.
The same thing.
Amazing.
So the only issue is it sounds like it could be, you know, decently handy if you're a person that's going in and out of loud environments all the time. But one of the examples they gave was washing dishes. And so I tried that and couldn't trigger it. I've tried several other, like, I have a kindergartner, so he has a white noise machine in his room. Tried sort of like putting that right up to the microphone of the earbuds, and I couldn't get it to trigger. But finally, I was able to trigger it with crowd noise from a soccer game on my television. The thing about it is it's so subtle that it really does not make a difference. So you can, if you're listening for it, you can tell. But if you're sort of just like waiting for something to happen and not really like paying super close attention to what's going on, you're probably not going to even notice that it happened.
Yeah, two things. I mean, one, when I was testing this out, you know, and Billy was like, I'm not hearing it on these things. I was like, well, I turned on my TV and I bumped the volume up super high. And then I like just sat there and focused and concentrated on the sound on the Pixel Buds. And 2 seconds later, I heard a slight increase in volume.
Google's answer to noise canceling is raising the volume.
I will say though, like a lot of these things sound like stuff that Google has tried in its speaker products before, right? The Google Home Mini has something like this called ultrasound, where if you are using a hairdryer, it'll bump up the volume of what's playing so your podcast can get louder. And it'll, in that situation, prioritize the speaking voice so that you can still hear over the hum of your hairdryer, sure, or your blender. It's just sad that, like, if you're actually trying to use this out in the real world, I can't see the situation. For me, whenever I walk into a coffee shop or someplace that's noisy, I don't want to hear my music louder. I want to be able to hear what someone else is talking to me. I don't want to, like, suddenly become extra deaf. Like,
yeah. This is not a good solution. We are still looking forward to seeing Microsoft's Surface Buds, which are completely open. So that's like a different, like, they're not even trying to mask the sound. They're trying to be like sort of like the AirPods in that you hear the outside world and you hear the sound. This is going to be an interesting year for wireless audio because there were a lot of innovations last year. So I'm looking forward to seeing new stuff.
Yeah, I think we're going to continue to see the price come down. Sony just introduced a pair of true wireless earbuds in their extra bass line that are $130. Those also don't have ANC, but they do have most of the features that you would want, and pretty solid battery life too. So I think what you're going to continue to see is three things. And it really started at the end of last year, but smaller size for the buds, everything, it's like technology everywhere. Everything continues to get smaller. You're going to see better battery life as a whole. I think we're going to move up pretty quickly from 5 to 6 being the standard to 10 to 12 being the standard. Probably before the end of the year, I would say. Yeah. I mean, these things are popular. And companies are going to try to throw everything they can at different models just to see how many people they can get to opt in to True Wireless.
Well, hey, thanks for your time, Billy. We really love talking about earbuds with you. You're the serious expert.
Yeah, next time we're going to talk about barbecue, though, right? I'm working on a grilling guide for around Memorial Day, so maybe you guys can bring it back then.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Bye, Billy.
Bye.
We've been talking so much about wireless earbuds. I want to know, what are you using? What are you listening to? And what's your criteria for what makes a good wireless earbud? Leave us a note at podcast@engadget.com. Let's move on to what we're currently working on. I just put up a review of MSI's GS66 Stealth, which is their latest thin gaming laptop. I really like the last model. This one isn't as, like, there's just too many other good gaming notebooks out there, so they can't really stand out as much, but it has great hardware. It feels good. MSI, I think, builds really nice, high-quality machines, even though they're not a company most people think of. And I'm also testing Asus's ZenBook Duo, the 14-inch dual-screen laptop that they announced back at CES. I'm very excited to play with this one. I don't know. There's so many laptops coming, I guess, because Intel and NVIDIA announced all their news. And actually, as we're recording this, Intel just announced their latest, 10th gen desktop processors. There's a lot of PC stuff happening. And we also know people are really into buying PCs right now because everyone's working from home and doing school from home. So it's really interesting to see how this market is reacting to the changing, you know, landscape of work and school and everything. But what's up with you, Sherlyn?
You're 100% right. It's the PC life for me. I'm still reviewing this laptop that, I can't talk about, but you will see it next week for sure, barring unforeseen circumstances. Then I'm moving on to another laptop, this time from HP. I don't know how much I can say. Well, it's the HP Elite Dragonfly with Tile that they announced at CES, and I'll be testing that out in general.
This week, I have a bit of a super pick for all of you. Whoa. It's Upload, a new show that's premiering basically when you're hearing this podcast on Amazon Prime. There are so many shows dropping these days on streaming services. I think this one is really interesting because it's created by Greg Daniels, who is a legend in sitcoms. This guy created, you know, The American Office, King of the Hill, Parks and Rec. He used to work on The Simpsons during, like, the best era of The Simpsons. And now he's moving into, like, this weird sci-fi story. Let me give you, you know, the premise as he described it during a roundtable I had with him. He calls Upload a philosophical, romantic comedy, science fiction, murder mystery. That might sound like word salad, but I think what's really impressive about the show is it doesn't really get bogged down in any of those things. For me, it's a great concoction. It's a stew of so many different genres. It's about a world, kind of a near future, where we have discovered the ability to take consciousness and upload it to the cloud. So essentially, instead of dying and who knows whatever happens after that, you will live on forever in this digital simulation of a world. I will give you the broad sketches of the plot here. Andy Allo plays an angel, basically a customer support agent for people in the afterlife. And the main star of the show is Robbie Amell, who's kind of a startup bro who dies like at the beginning of the show, just like in a very suspicious self-driving car accident. And he finds himself uploaded. And they kind of, form a friendship. They get to know each other really well. I think there's a lot going on here. It's kind of wild. It's very Black Mirror in certain respects. The process of uploading reminds me of Futurama and like the suicide machines, because like it involves exploding your head in very dramatic and gross ways. So this is a show about digital consciousness, but also it's a show about amazing technology that exists alongside very, very few resources in the world. Like the first scene of the show is people crowded in public transportation, wearing face masks, people, you know, struggling to get by. There are a lot of people unemployed. But before we get too deep into that, Sherlyn, what did you think of the show? Because I know you binged it immediately after I recommended it.
Well, yeah, I thank you for recommending it. A lot of the time, I don't like things you recommend, so you know. But
that's not true. The actual history of this podcast is you thanking me for all of my recommendations. But okay,
I like this a lot more than your other recommendation to me, Devs. I like that this is a comedy. It keeps things very light. Devs is a little too intense for me personally, and I love the world they've created. It's nuts. There's things like, okay, so the main company, and I'm trying to not do spoilers. So the main company you'll the story revolves around is called Horizon, but like with an E in Zen, you know. So it sounds like our parent company, Verizon. Obviously, it's play on that. And then there's other like massive conglomerates that like apparently Google and Samsung have merged, and then like
I don't know if they got permission for this, but yeah. There is Oscar Mayer Intel in the show. Like it's very Idiocracy levels. There's extreme corporate insanity.
Facebook's turned into Las Vegas. Panera's turned into some sort of like Panera Eon is one of the afterlife provider thingies, I guess. It's just insane. It's great. And then also I love the world it's built. I love the characters. I did not like the main character played by Andy Allo at first, in the first like three scenes. But after sticking with the show, I didn't even really have to stick to it that much. Mm-hmm. It would just drew me in. The story is good. It's intriguing, but also the self-driving car tech, like all the tech is just, it all makes so much
it's
sense.
It's a lot of cool tech. It's a lot of big ideas. It's funny. It's surprisingly like sexy at times too.
It's
like they will get into like a very explicit sex scene when you don't expect it in a show from Greg Daniels. I sat down in a round table, kind of a Zoom round table, actually, to chat with Greg Daniels and the cast about the show. I really wanted to know how Greg Daniels conceived of the show and how he built this world, especially the whole idea of, you know, extreme technology alongside people who really don't have much. There's a lot of poverty in the show. There's a lot of like environmental crisis. So here's Greg Daniels explaining the world of Upload.
I think that my attitude towards technology, I always told the crew, this isn't a dystopia and it's not a utopia, it's some kind of middletopia. And I think as a person who comes from a comedy background, when you think about all the technological magic that we're capable of now, there's always unintended consequences and glitches and screw ups. And I think one of the unfortunate themes about life in America over the past several decades has been the growing income inequality. And I think that technology is kind of great in many ways, but it's also being used by big companies now to, you know, become more efficient in ways that don't benefit everybody. I think part of the show is trying to make you feel the unfairness of how the peoples have different accesses to the wonders of the technology, kind of.
With Nora, you really get to see her perspective of someone who's existing in both these worlds, and she's struggling to get by, and all she wants is her dad to upload so that way they can be together forever. but she gets this front row seat to seeing how some people have it better. I think the show kind of dives into this world and shows, okay, within as much advancement as we have with technology, at the core, it's still a business.
So props a lot to Greg Daniels, because the world isn't just like kind of, you know, when you watch science fiction, it's you're looking for an escape, right?
And the
way they've built this world, it is a bit of an escape, but it's also like incredibly realistic. It uses tech we already sort of know. It uses 3D printers, it uses drones, it uses like fitness tracker looking phones as well, by the way, which is like, and then apps that we are already familiar ish with. There, it's not hard to envision this becoming our future.
We're very close.
Really good. The other thing I will say that I really liked, and Devendra did not know this about me until now, is that I have the hots for Robbie Amell. I know he seems a little bland and but I recently, so
I mean,
I've
he
always...
looks like a mannequin with like the
yeah.
There's a lot going on, so I was like, okay, yeah, this is thrilling.
Very typical me. But Robbie Amell, I know from his brother Stephen Amell, and Stephen Amell played Oliver in Arrow, the CW's Arrow, and that's the main reason I know Robbie.
We're going down a rabbit hole here.
Down a real weird rabbit hole. What I watch.
Amazing. But how does this compare, Sherlyn, to Robbie Amell's oeuvre? Basically.
Oh God! So I've only watched one other movie of Robbie's, and Robbie, my bro, you know, he's very likable in this show. He plays a character that is a little torn, actually very torn and a little lost, and I like it. You know, again, so many endearing characters. I think that Greg Daniels did like nail this. You know that the heart and soul of a show is very good characters. And then
there's no one evil character, which I kind of like. Like even the people you dislike at the beginning, like Robbie Amell's character has, you know, a girlfriend who he's not quite into and he's trying to break up with.
Yeah.
And even she is somebody who we earn sympathy for, I think, throughout the show. So
they make
there's
it a point,
lot going on there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very, well, I wouldn't say it's rare that I agree with Dev on show recommendations, but it is.
You keep saying that.
I know. I'm saying
not
I
true.
Wouldn't say it's rare. We do agree a lot, but I think that's just because like lately there have been so many shows. I see this show as a mix of The Good Place meets, and that's also how Devendra pitched it to me, right? Kind of like The Good Place, but techier. And is The Good Place meets San Junipero, that episode of Black Mirror that a lot of people love.
Yeah, which is perfect. It's perhaps the best episode of Black Mirror. Yeah.
Arguable. Not my favorite, but one of the best, obviously. And I also see a bit of Altered Carbon in there without the grit, the mess, and but also the potential to do so much with this. There's a lot of themes that are happening here. There's a lot of questions being asked and explored. It makes me think the way Good Place used to make me think. So just, you know, watch.
There's a lot to think about. Like they are taking people and, you know, giving them a digital afterlife, and then these digital afterlife people, they still can see and talk to all their living relatives.
Oh my
God,
and
they sit there and watch their relatives get older and, you know, move on with their lives. It's such a weird concept.
Yeah.
One question I definitely wanted to ask Greg Daniels was about digital consciousness and his idea of building this, because you talk to philosophers and they will argue forever about the nature of consciousness. Like, can you just, if you took everything in your brain and all that matter and somehow digitized that, would that still be you? We don't quite know, but here's Greg Daniels' answer to it and how he thought about it.
Well, that debate comes up in episode 7 because you know, Nora's dad is very skeptical. He thinks it's an abomination that there would be a digital version of yourself. I mean, you know, my personal feeling and what the show is based on is the idea that if you were to, you know, deconstruct your brain, it's a finite amount of information. You know, it's a very large amount of information because of the trillions of connections and everything, but it's a finite amount, and it's all based on atoms and chemicals and whatever. And if you had a large enough computer and a quick enough way to scan it, you ought to be able to, you know, measure everything, all the information that's in someone's brain. They're working on doing a map of neurons of different animals, and they've got like a map of a very simple worm that has like 600 connections in their brain. I mean, we have trillions of connections, so we're really a long way away from this. What my hope is that Amazon is so happy with the show that they actually try and do the technology, and that I get a free upload at the end. For me, that's what I'm looking for out of this whole experience.
So what's really interesting about Upload is that you can really tell Greg Daniels has been thinking about this for a while, for a long, long while. This actually, I think the concept for him started out as a sketch he was going to write for SNL with Dana Carvey. Like the idea of a 4-minute sketch of people uploading themselves. He let that idea gestate. And he was talking about in our roundtable, you know, during the 2008 writer's strike, he spent a little more time kind of building up this world. He was planning to make like a series of novels, I think, like maybe going into the YA novel trend. And then that didn't happen. Mm. And then as like, you know, as his shows ended, as Parks and Rec ended and he had a little more time, he spent a lot of time thinking about like where to take this idea. So I think what's really interesting here is that this world is so fully formed.
Yeah.
And you could really feel that he's thought about this for a long, long while. So it's rare to see something like this on TV. So I'm hoping we get more seasons. It kind of ends on a cliffhanger. But it's all very exciting. So I hope you all check it out. That's it, folks. Thank you for joining us. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find me online at Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at /filmcast@slashfilm.com. Where can we find you, Sherlyn?
You can find me tweeting about nothing at all on Twitter at Sherlynlow.
And also heading up the Robbie Amell fan club,
right?
Oh,
God, yes.
Apparently. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Thanks for joining us, folks.
I can smell the meat from here.
That's kind of weird.